Jessica, and this is ATC Presents Daebak K-Rambles, where a couple of friends review Korean dramas. I'm here today with a special guest. It is Mina from K-Pop Bookshelf. Hey, what's up?
Hey, how is it going?
It's going well. We were talking before we started recording, and I'm so excited to have you on. I was telling you that I'm a huge fan of your podcast, that I've heard bunch of episodes, and my favorite one... Actually, it's like the most divisive one, I guess, is the 1982, like the feminist prose series that you did. It was like a series of like three back to back podcast episodes. And it like made me very upset.
Right. So that book, Kim Ji-young, Born 1982, was a very controversial book in Korea. And I just found it so interesting because by American feminist rhetoric standards, I don't think it was all that crazy of a book or like outrageous of a book. But it really hit a nerve in Korea.
It hit a nerve in me too, especially because your podcast is so well researched. And so you were bringing in a lot of other stats. And I was like, oh my God, I was getting mad, right?
Yeah.
But I love your podcast. And I'm so excited to have you on. I was actually a little bit afraid because you're so soft spoken in your podcast.
And I was like, that's not my real life voice.
Right. We were talking before and I was like, oh my gosh, she's so like animated and it's great. So I was worried that you would be very chill when I got on this call with you, but you're not. You're amazing. And again, solo podcasting is very difficult. I admire you so much for doing that. I don't know if I've ever done a solo pod before, but it's hard. It's hard to keep it up.
It is. It's hard to talk to yourself. And I'm like usually recording late at night, which accounts for why I'm a little bit more soft-spoken in that podcast, because it's always like 2 a.m. and I live in an apartment building, so I don't want to disturb everybody else. So, but yeah.
Yeah, I'm Hispanic, so I feel like I'm always yelling in the mic. And then Rico's like, you gotta back away from the mic. Like, he's giving me all these pointers, and I'm like, whatever, just like, let's go.
I definitely can get very loud as well. So,
yeah, it is so nice to see you and meet you for the first time. In an effort to just get to know you better, I know that some people may not have listened to your podcast. So what is like your K-drama background before we jump into this review that we're going to do today, which is on Navilera?
Navilera, yes. So my K-drama background actually started with J-dramas. I used to take language classes at a Japanese school. That was after I visited Japan. And I first started watching J-dramas. And I was like, these are ridiculous. I love it. This is like so weird. Because some of the first ones I saw were very bizarre storylines. And then from there, my cousins who were very big K-pop fans, they were like, you got to get into K-pop. And I was like, no, I wasn't like into it at all yet. And so then Kai from EXO was in a Japanese drama.
Oh, forget it.
And so I was like, well, maybe I took one look at him and I was like, okay, maybe I'll watch this.
Kai is beautiful.
Yeah. Exactly. And I forget the name of it now. It's like something about spring. Anyway, so I watched Kai and I kind of had like a very vague awareness of who he was. And then my cousins were like, are you ready now to watch K-dramas and get into like Korean stuff? And so I watched, you know, everyone's gateway drug to K-dramas, Boys Over Flowers.
Yeah. Yeah.
and I was like, wow, this is very interesting to put it one way. Because that is, I think, I think when you rewatch it or when you think about it, you're like, what did I just watch? Like, what?
What's a fever dream?
Like, so yeah, it's like really weird. But yeah, so that's my K-drama history.
Love it. Yeah. I think you have here My Odyssey, My Mister as well.
Yeah. So
is that like a drama that you really admire?
I do. I loved the acting in My Odyssey, also known as My Mister. And I like kind of now, it's so funny because Boys Over Flowers and some of the early J dramas I watch are nothing like these kind of more serious, almost like police procedurals or like mysteries. And not that My Odyssey is that, but My Odyssey is like a very quiet, very, the emotions are kind of all on their face, that there's not a lot of a lot of talking because the both main characters are kind of quiet people. And IU and his name is Gacy, but the actor who is from Parasite.
Yes.
The Ajishi and My Ajishi was so, so good. And he's good at like everything. So I love that.
I mean, you would never know this, but we just recorded an episode for My Mister for season 2. And like, it hasn't been released yet. Like, we're talking now, the episode isn't out yet. So you would never know. But like, I like cried during that show and I cried on the episode as well. So it really hit a nerve for me. And the show that we're going to talk about now is also one of those shows that like hit a really it hit me right in the feels. Mm-hmm. And the last episode, like, completely wrecked me. So we'll get going on it. Thank you so much for talking about your K-drama background. I feel like everyone is like, oh, yeah, Boys Over Flowers. Yeah. Oh, God. What a drama. Okay, so before we get started, we'll do some housekeeping. If this is your first time listening, go ahead and subscribe on your favorite podcast app. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and so many more. If you like us, please give us a review on Apple Podcasts. That goes such a long way for us to get discovered by listeners just like you. And then come and check us out on social media, where I basically run wild with our accounts on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at @ATCDebachPod. And if you're a fan, please, please consider becoming a patron. It's a great way for you to get involved and show your support. You can check out the page on patreon.com/alwayscriticpod, which is our movie podcast. Don't get discouraged when you see Always the Critic. That's what ATC stands for. All right, so we're going to get going on our review of Novelera. Would you want to do the honors of reading the Asian Wiki synopsis? I can read it. It's kind of long, but if you want to read it, be my guest.
Yes, I will read it. Hold okay. on, I'm going to put my glasses real quick. Okay, so the wiki synopsis, Asian wiki synopsis is, Shim Deok-joo has had a lifelong dream of performing ballet. Due to life situations, he put aside his dream of becoming a ballet dancer and worked a normal job to support his family. He is now 70 years old and retired. Now, Shim Deok-joo makes the decision to pursue his dream again. He joins a ballet company to learn ballet, and there he meets Lee Chae-ruk. Lee Chae-ruk is a 23-year-old man. His mother was a ballet dancer, but she died from a disease when he was young. Lee Chae-ruk learned that he has a talent for ballet, but after pursuing ballet, he barely has contact with his father, and he has a hard time supporting himself financially. At this time, Shim Deok-joo appears in his life.
Yes, so thank you so much for reading the synopsis. Novelera aired originally from March to April 2021, so it's a pretty recent drama. We are in the year 2022 right now for the future purposes, because it's hard to tell. This show is 12 episodes long, not 16, and it's directed by Han Do-kwa, and he directed Squad 38, among other things. This show is written by Hoon and Jimin, which are, they are the writers of the webcomic. This was originally a webtoon. And then the screenwriter is Eun-mi, and she wrote Tunnel from 2017, which is good to know. This show stars Park In-hwan as Shim Deok-joo, and he is a very well-known actor. He's been in the biz forever. He has nearly 30 credits to his name for just movies. And that includes The Odd Family, Zombie on Sale from 2019. I recently watched that movie for the first time. It's on Amazon Prime right now.
Oh, really?
Yes, it's a zombie movie, but it's a comedy. So definitely give it a watch. It's funny. And then he's also in Miss Granny from 2014. Also very funny. I think that's on Netflix right now. For TV, he has nearly 40 credits to his name, including The Present is Beautiful from this year. This is coming out this year in April. And then School 2021, he's also in that show. Song Kang plays Lee Chae-ruk, and he is kind of well known now for being an it guy, I would say. And yeah. He was first seen in The Liar and His Lover. That was like his breakout role in 2017. And then he went on to do Love Alarm, seasons 1 and 2 on Netflix. I personally would not recommend Love Alarm.
Oh, really?
I did not like Love Alarm. Did you like Love Alarm? Did you
see? I have it on my list. Oh, and I never actually have gotten to it yet. So actually, that's interesting you said that.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't recommend Love Alarm. He was in Sweet Home, which is also a Netflix original in 2020. And that one's like a horror K-drama. Of course, he was in Nevertheless in 2021, and he's currently in Forecasting Love and Weather with Park Min-young, and it's coming out this year. It's currently airing right now at the time of recording. I think he's the Netflix guy now.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, because he's been in a ton of Netflix shows. They just keep casting him.
Don't they call him, like, the Prince of Netflix or something?
Yeah,
I saw that.
That makes a lot of sense.
I don't know who calls him that, but someone, I saw it here and there that they call him the Prince of Netflix.
So. I believe it. And
or Netflix's son, maybe.
Netflix's son. That's
something like that.
Yeah, he keeps getting cast in Netflix originals, and good for him. I mean, good for him. Did you like this show? After all this has been said, the housekeeping is out of the way. We know the cast and everyone behind the scenes. What did you think of Novelera?
Should I give my rating now or should I just...
Oh, you can give your rating now if you want to. Out of what would you give this show out of 5 soju bottles? And like, why? Why would you give it that rating?
Okay, so I would give it only a 3, which is, I think, low balling a little bit. But that's because I loved, like, the potential of the show. And I don't think it ever quite got to a certain point where I could get where I could give it a 5. Like, I could see it being a 5, if that makes any sense. But some of the things I didn't like about it was, like, so many little individual character plot lines. But it was left a lot of, like, really undeveloped. They didn't really delve into their motivations or, like, establish, like, why do these people care about each other? Why should I care about them? And when they did manage to say some things about the characters, I feel like it was really late in the season of the show. Yeah. So that's why I only gave it 3 soju bottles. But I feel like if they ever remake this or something, which probably will never happen, or if there's, like, another country's, like, a Japanese or someone remakes it, maybe it would be better.
Wow. Okay. So I didn't expect you to, I mean, yeah, you kind of said that you were lowballing it, but I would probably give it 3.5 to 4 soju bottles. 4 if I'm being generous, but I think sitting right now, it'd be a 3.5 soju bottles. And basically, I thought that it could have been shorter. Like, it could have been probably 8 episodes versus 12 episodes. So there was, like, a lot of fat that could have been trimmed. I kind of agree and kind of disagree with when you say that some characters could have had more development, because I feel like towards the end of the show, a lot of arcs, like, were
completed. They just suddenly tie a bunch of things. Yeah.
Yeah, which is nice. But I think, honestly, the central relationship between Song Kang's character and In-hwan's character is so beautiful that it covers a lot of sins.
I actually agree with that. Yeah, it was very sentimental. And, like, that's why I say, like, there was so much potential. But and like you were saying, it was a little bit longer for, like, what it really had to be. And some of the characters, there was, like, too much information. I was like, I don't care about these people. Like, why are we dwelling on this? And then there was other characters and relationships. I was like, where is more of this? Like, where is this coming from? So it was a little bit of a double-edged thing.
Yeah, I would say that the cinematography was absolutely stunning. Mm-hmm. That's a major plus for the show. I would say that the dialogue and the amount of quotable lines in this was, like, a lot. Like, you're just overwhelmed by the amount of nuggets that they're throwing at you left and right.
Yes.
Honestly,
we need to soar.
Oh God. Yeah. Well, we can talk about that too in the spoiler section, but I ended up falling mildly in love with the family. And I thought that I would be very in love with the family. Like, there's other K-drama families that you're like, I love this family. I love this crew. They're so mesmerizing to watch on screen. And I feel like I'm a part of their family. Watching them for 16 hours or what have you makes me feel like I'm in this drama with them. I'm feeling their emotions. And to a certain extent, I was. But I was more on the side of Deokchul, Haraboji. Yeah. Than I was, like, anybody else on the show. So when they were all together, it wasn't very, it was organic, but not necessarily, what's the word? I didn't want to, like, return to them.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's what I mean. Like, the one-to-one relationships with Haraboji and, like, his granddaughter, Haraboji, and certain other adult children. Like, those were interesting. But when the house was completely full, even though I do feel they had chemistry as a cast or they had chemistry as a family, an on-TV family, it wasn't as heartwarming as just, like, the one-to-one relationships with everyone. Like, even with the mom and her kids or, like, Taeruk and Haraboji. So,
yeah. I found that portions of this show hit too close to home for me, and it felt like I was watching the saddest thing I've ever watched.
Oh, really?
Yes. I don't want to give anything away in spoilers, but I've had certain family members go through the same thing that this main character has gone through.
Yeah.
And as a caregiver, in a lot of instances, I feel like this family was going through the stages of grief.
Yes, for sure.
And they were going on a really strong, heavy emotional journey that wasn't quite portrayed as well as it probably could have been.
Right.
There were scenes where I was like, this is very accurate. And I was like bawling. But then other scenes, I was like, we could extend this. Like, I don't know. It just seemed like it was too much and not enough at the same time.
I definitely can see that, because I feel like they were kind of going with the with the assumption that a lot of the audience would kind of figure out the, you know, gravity of the situation. I'm trying to spoil it. You know, and I don't know that everybody does necessarily really understand like what
exactly
this all means.
Exactly. So. That's exactly what I'm trying to say, is that there's a lot of implications and underlying things, like consequences, I would say is a good word, for what Hadabaji is doing and like what his diagnosis means.
Right.
And I'm not sure that they really kind of cover the gravity of like what is happening and like the family, how they're processing it. Like they're throwing ideas out, like, how do we deal with this? And I'm like, you don't get it.
I will say, this is going to sound harsh or something, but I feel like they spent too much time on ballet. No, wait. Hear me out. Because
they spent too much time on ballet. Okay.
No, because it felt like the... I'm going to get so defensive now. No, I'm kidding. The one scene, or like, it felt like it was just one scene that they filmed once and they kept showing it over and over again, which
true.
Is like the body double in the practice room, like doing like pirouettes, or I don't know all the ballet terms, but right, he's doing all this stuff, which looked cool the first like few times, but then they kept, I swear it seemed like they were either just doing the exact same camera angles or they were just playing the same footage.
I agree.
It's like, if we cut that down a little bit, we could have delved more into like what you're talking about with the diagnosis or the family's like struggle about like, how do we deal with this? How do we handle this?
I agree completely. Yeah, they kept reusing. It felt like they were reusing footage, and you're right.
Yeah.
The ballet sequences, at first I was like, oh, they're doing this really well. And then I was like, they're not doing this well at all. Because the cut, it was so abrupt, right? Like, it was either they were shown from the waist up, or they were shown way far away, like in shadow. And you can tell that that's obviously not them. Yeah, it's not Hadabaji, and it's not Song Kang doing the ballet. So it's annoying. It's annoying because
it was distracting.
It
for
was
sure. Like,
yeah.
I was like, I want to see their faces now, these talented, lovely dancers.
Especially in the finale. I was like, okay, this is their time to really showcase what they can do, what these actors have learned over the course of 12 episodes. I know that they've probably been training behind the scenes. And actually, Song Kang spent 5 to 6 months training ballet before they started filming. So I'm like, okay, they're going to showcase these people, and it's going to be evident that it's the actors doing this ballet.
Mm-hmm.
Not the case.
No. By the way, I have a fun fact about Song Kang from when I was researching for this episode, which is that his father was a gymnast.
Oh,
so, fun fact for you all.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, relevant, because he mentioned in some interviews just like how he was worried about trying to do ballet and whether he'd be good at it, whether he would look good, or like just look really bad, or like it just be a complete fail. And then it was revealed, I guess, that his father was a gymnast in the past. And I don't know like what level of gymnastics they were, you know, he was doing, but Song Kang was able to kind of talk about it with his dad, like, you know, do I look bad?
That's good. Yeah, no, I didn't know that. And there's a certain level of athleticism that comes with just watching Song Kang do ballet, or I attempt to do ballet, because I couldn't see if he was really doing ballet most of the time. But I think that he pulled it off pretty well. And I just wish that they had given them the time that it should have been given, or the way that it should have been filmed should have been different. What's an example of like, Black Swan is a great movie that has body doubles, but you know, they use CGI and all this stuff to put Natalie Portman's face onto the ballerina's face. And of course, Natalie Portman, like Song Kang, spend months learning ballet and getting the forms right so that it could be as seamless as possible. And that's a movie that I feel could have been an inspiration for the way that this was shot, that Navilera could have been shot.
I'm going to age myself and shout out another ballet movie, which is Center Stage.
Okay.
Which came out like in maybe 2002 or something, but it featured actual ballerinas and ballerinos. So it's a little bit different in terms of how to film it, but how to film the dancing. I agree. Cause like, there's a way I felt watching Center Stage that it was so exciting. It was so like, you got like, how cutthroat is the ballet like field, or like how like intense everything is. Like nothing is just like whatever. It's like life or death for all the dancers. And for Song Kang's character, Taerok, you do feel like it's life or death for him, but he has like these other survival struggles anyway. But in Center Stage, it was just like, wow, this this is like good dance versus this is bad dance, and this is like amazingly hard versus, do you ever watch like Project Runway and you like start or some show like that and you're like, yeah. Oh, that stitch is wrong, or like, oh,
right,
that
right.
So you're like, suddenly you're like, you're an expert in fashion or whatever, or like in clothing manufacturing. So I got that sense from like Center Stage, which was kind of a corny movie, but like I loved it when I was younger, and I was hoping Navi Lera would kind of inspire these feelings in me about dance. Like, I'll suddenly be really passionate about dance. Mm. I'll want to take ballet lessons. And I didn't feel like that, partially because of like recycled footage or whatever was going on.
I don't know what that was.
Yeah. But Song Kang, I'm like calling by his character's name, Song Kang did do, I thought, a good job of like at least giving off ballerino vibes, right? Mm-hmm, however much dancing mm-hmm. he actually did on the footage. So
yeah. Yeah. I don't think that maybe the filmmakers the showrunners weren't as comfortable with showing the actors from the waist down, and maybe I'm not going to throw this out there. Is it because they were in tights?
No, I actually think from what I know, and again, a lot of what I know from Center Stage and Black Swan, is that the footwork and stuff has to be so precise, yeah. Or else from like a ballet, like to be his level of a ballerino, he would have to be nailing the footwork. And I don't know who they hired to have a bunch of time to be on a drama as like a body double and do these kinds of scenes. But I mean, it probably wasn't like the principal ballerino of of whatever Korean, you know, dance company. So that's my thing. They just were trying to downplay any kind of technical critique they might have gotten from the dance community. If that's a thing, I'm kind of guessing it might be. So yeah. I think that's why they kind of...
I was thinking more like, oh, to protect their like dignity because they'd be in tights. Yeah, I agree that if they're not good enough, get a double. But at the same time, it was like flash dance level. Like, yeah. It's like, okay, that's a man dressed as a woman and like...
Well, that's why it's like, why are we watching this scene so many times, or scenes of them practicing in the practice room so many times?
It felt monotonous, repetitive, recycled. Yes, boring. It made dance look boring. Like, why? So,
right.
I agree. That's a major complaint of mine. Did you have any other major complaints that you wanted to talk about generally before we get into spoilers?
Well, without giving spoilers, I did think the characters were so, this is just me maybe, but the characters were so confusing. Like, I didn't understand why the Magne, Dok Chul's Magne, his youngest son, was like this depressed former doctor. Like, what was his whole deal? And then we finally got some of that way, way later, like what his deal was.
Yeah.
Or like, you know, I felt like the daughter's husband was seen as like kind of a loser because he didn't go to college. And I was like, why do we care about this again? Like, I know why, but like, why does this family care that much about this? Or the bully, there's like a bully, not to spoiler anything, but the bully's whole dilemma with
That was bullshit.
I was like, what is this? What is happening? Like, anyway, so that's my biggest complaint, was like everything took too long to develop, and then some things didn't get like as developed as I would have liked to have seen it. So
yeah, true. Okay, I agree with you completely. And at this point, I think we're just going to get into spoilers. So if you don't care to be spoiled, keep listening. But if you haven't watched Navi Lera, I would suggest you go watch it and then come back and listen to our spoiler talk. So we're going to get started on spoilers right after this.
Hey, you want to come in?
Okay, so we're on the other side of spoilers for Navi Lera, and we're going to talk through all of the things that probably we didn't like. So you mentioned the Magne character, who is the youngest son of our Harubuji, and he was like a surgeon and gave up his whole career for what? Like, I got it kind of at the beginning when he was like kept wearing the Crocs. That's what they are. Yeah. He kept wearing Crocs, and it was like the middle of winter and he's wearing Crocs, and it was to remind him of the blood that fell on the Crocs during one of his last surgeries. He lost a patient. And he was saying, oh, I already like said his time of death, but his blood was still falling on my shoes, and it was warm. His blood was still warm.
Yeah, it sounded like he had a botched surgery, and that's why, correct me if I'm wrong, and that's why he quit the field of medicine entirely, which like, bro, you're going to be a doctor. Like, that's going to happen.
I wish they said, I know. First of all, I know you should be jaded by now because you cannot save 100% of your patients.
Unfortunately.
And that's a very sad reality. And I guess he kind of hit up against this wall in his mind and heart where he was feeling hopeless. And I think they should have said that a little bit better in the dialogue.
Or maybe he had a personal, like not an actual personal connection to the patient who passed away, but maybe he saw something in him like, oh my gosh, this guy's my age, or oh my gosh, this person's a brother and a father or whatever. This person's living some amazing life. Or they gave us nothing about why he cares so much about this patient. And I thought why is he this depressed? It just didn't make sense.
It didn't make sense that he wanted to do a whole documentary on the patient and the patients that he lost, which seemed like a terrible thing to do. Right. Like, I'm like, are you thinking this through? You don't think that there's going to be a bit of a backlash from the family or the friends from these deceased patients? Like, he didn't like think it through. He thought he was doing a good thing, or maybe just it was so selfish almost for him to like go poking at this.
Well, because he obviously had unanswered questions, but we don't know what they were. We had no reason to like get it or like why are you making a documentary? It just seems so random.
And I thought, go right ahead.
No, I was going to say, even wearing the Crocs, okay, yes, the blood was warm, but like it takes, I don't know, the whole thing. I was like, if you work for any amount of time in or around a hospital, it's like not that deep, not to be mean about it, but just like blood gets cold after someone dies. You don't have to go around wearing those Crocs forever. I don't know. Like they try to make it more sentimental than it was. And I think if you've ever seen someone who's gone through medical school and training, or if you've been someone who's gone through medical school training, like this is not your first death. It's now probably not your first death at your hand, you know, by your hand almost. You wouldn't get this worked up unless you're like, oh my gosh, this was my brother. Right. Oh my gosh, this was my best friend.
Yeah, there has to be a certain level of professionalism. And even though you're in a life or death situation and people are depending on you, this is your job. You do this day in and day out. And sure, it gets to you. But like, do you quit your entire career over it? It didn't seem like there was enough for him to dislike the job. Like maybe he didn't. In my mind, what I was thinking was that he was a closeted creative and that he wanted to be in a more creative job. And so he chose documentary. I was like, oh, he's a filmmaker. Like he wants to be in that field versus in the medical field. So it was never a good fit for him. Not the case at all. Like I made up this whole story in my head. No, he was
I was going to say, because that was kind of where I thought it was going to, where like he kind of became a doctor to satisfy his parents' whole deal. But then he kept going to visit his former doctor colleagues and friends. And he was like constantly at the hospital.
Yeah.
He was almost never actually making the documentary, except for like a couple steps he made where like scouted a location and he, you know, had some cameras or whatever. Then he finally started doing the other documentary. So I was like, I do not get this. And not to, you know, shame anyone's whatever mixed feelings, depression, trauma, whatever he had going on. But I wish they would have shared it with us. Or been like, when he was younger, he wished he did this and he felt like a failure. What was it that was so bad, right? Did he feel like he failed? Did he feel like he let something down, himself down? It just made no real sense, ultimately.
Yes, we agree on that. We can talk about the son-in-law character who was like trying to be a politician. He was like a wannabe politician. Trying to go for like local government. And to me, that was kind of a poop storyline because it was very it was very unsatisfactory. The guy didn't win his election. He seemed to be a burden on his wife, who was very frustrated with him, kept saying like, oh, I don't know about this, and kept like just looking down upon him. And not necessarily because he didn't have a college education, but because he didn't have any realistic goals, and he didn't have...
Yeah, he was a little wishy-washy.
He was wishy-washy and just needed a lot of confidence boosting. And then he wasn't good at anything he did. So, like, at that point, like, you should probably switch to something else. It seemed like they were in debt all the time. The mom character, Padabaji's wife, kept giving her money. Like, they were struggling.
Yeah, and also it was interesting because I felt like towards the end, finally, the husband redeemed, this sounds horrible, redeemed himself because when Harabuji was facing his diagnosis and everything, he was the one who's like, we can take care of him. We can manage this. You're my family. I'm your son too. And it sort of like painted this thing because I felt like in the beginning they were painting Harabuni, the grandma, to be like someone who was so hung up on maybe status or like just never wanted to be like struggling with money again.
Yeah.
She wanted all her kids to be super settled, successful, etc. And he wasn't like helping her daughter to achieve that. But then he was like, look, I'm family, like we're a family. And so it's not always about, I think it was like a reminder of like, it's not always about status or position in life or, you know, whether or not you can make decisions. It's also just about being a reliable family member.
Yeah, I agree with that. That was something that I wish I would have touched on more, is that there was a weird dichotomy between the spouses that married into the family and then the sons and daughters of Harabaji. Mm-hmm. And that they seemed to be like second class citizens within the family. Like they didn't have any say. They were voicing their opinions and like the other siblings are like, you can't say anything. You're not even part of this family, which out of line. They should have been slapped years ago. Like you can tell these are like old married couples. They've been married for like over a decade. And still,
yeah,
they were
so loyal. They both were like, yeah, we'll take him in. We'll do whatever. Like, we'll drop everything. And I was like, why? Why are you? Again, the like lack of like explaining motivations or people's like whatever. Like, why are you doing this? They didn't. It's not like we saw Harabaji super close to either of those children-in-law because it just wasn't within the scope of this drama.
Yeah.
There probably was something, but we didn't see it.
I think that they showcased the spouses being taken care of by the Harabaji, especially with the wife of the oldest son, mm-hmm. who supported Harabaji when he came out and said he wanted to do ballet. She was unconditionally supportive of him. And they did a flashback of her as a new mom, and she was struggling. She was struggling to find her identity as a new mom. She struggled because she wanted to go back to working full time, and her husband was like relegating her to the house and being a full time mom. And so she was like, he supported me during that. I know that you came to the house and were taking care of your granddaughter I was struggling at talking through my issues with my mom on the phone. And it seemed like that was so profound to her, and it left such a mark on her that she was like, you're mine. I'm yours and I'm going to support you. I didn't feel like there was that closeness with the husband, the politician husband.
Right. Especially because he got ragged on so much by not Harabaji, but like everybody else.
Yeah. But his wife, which was their daughter, had this profound, amazing, emotional moment in the final episode where she cries and begs her dad not to go into the nursing home and let them take care of him. Let her take care of him. She was going through this whole infertility crisis throughout her married life, and they never were able to have children. It's a huge emotional journey that kind of came to an end during the show, where she said, I'm giving up. Like, I can't have
kids.
And
I also wondered, like, she was giving up anyways on trying to pursue this building a family, at least through biological means. But then when she found out about Harabaji's diagnosis, I almost feel like maybe they're trying to tell us, and it could just be me like making this up, but maybe they're trying to tell us that she found a purpose, like the purpose or whatever role like having a child would have filled in her life, or whatever fulfillment that would have brought her. Now she was kind of channeling that into taking care of her father.
Exactly. Her. Yeah. She basically said instead of paying it forward with her own children, she'd pay him back for all the kindness and care that he showed her growing up. And she cited this one thing of he always picked her up from school whenever it rained.
Oh, yeah.
Which was like, oh, God. I was crying. I was crying. I was emotional. It was, I personally, my grandfather passed away many years ago, but he also had Alzheimer's, and he died basically bedridden and of Alzheimer's. Like, his body just shut down. And the fact that she cited that he came to get her from school and it was whenever it rained, he was, it's such a subtle thing, but my grandfather used to pick me up from school every day. Yeah. So it was like, oh, just like gut wrenching. It hit me right in the feels because it was so close to home. You know, when she was like, please don't do this. And at this point, I mean, I guess you can kind of, if you are sticking around and you haven't watched Navilera, you can kind of guess that like the Harabaji has Alzheimer's.
Mm-hmm. He's in the early stages.
He's in the early stages of Alzheimer's, which I knew immediately, like when he got lost the first time. Mm-hmm. When he got lost in the museum, I was
you
like,
could tell it was some kind of cognitive decline.
Yes. I was like, oh no, he's got Alzheimer's or he's got dementia. Sad. Yeah.
But earlier on, I kind of was guessing like it was like a terminal illness, like cancer.
Yes.
And then when he, like you said, when he started getting lost or having these like confusion moments, you're like, oh, it's something like dementia.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to take a little minute to talk to about Alzheimer's in Korea, because I looked up about
Yes, absolutely. Tell Korea.
So Korea is, as you already probably know, a population where a lot of the people are aging, just like Japan, for example. And it's the fastest aging country among the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, also known as OECD countries. This is something I'm quoting, by the way, from a medical journal called the Annals of Geriatric Medicine and Research. So with projections showing it possibly becoming that country with the highest number of older people in 2075. So it's a very big concern in Korea, just like how to do elder care. It's also a country where not a lot of children are being born, or so there's this fear of, like, in the future, society won't be able to sustain or support their elderly population. And in fact, an article that I read that interviewed Park In-hwan, the gentleman who played Harabuji, he himself said, 1 out of 4 people in Korea are seniors. That's how many seniors there are now. Dramas, films, and plays are all works that reflect on contemporary society. I hope that subjects become more diversified, such as care facilities or nursing homes. So I think he means, like, subjects of plays. Maybe they'll take place in, you know, they can't be a neglected population. So, and Alzheimer's in general is just such a devastating diagnosis to get. And I'm also going to just randomly say this here, that I thought it was interesting that as soon as Chaerok realized that Harabuji had Alzheimer's, he was so devastated. And I was like, I wonder if it's super realistic to think, not to rain on this parade, that a 20 however year old would, like, realize the gravity of this diagnosis.
That's a good point, is that I don't think I... This is hard because my grandfather got Alzheimer's and I think I was in my late teens, and I didn't think, I mean, I was like, oh yeah, he's going to forget stuff. But, like, as soon as I had to start coming over and changing his diaper, like, things totally changed. I was like, oh no, this is, like, a real debilitating disease. Yes. Like, in his case, he really, I mean, it was a decline, but it wasn't as rapid as other family members who also have been diagnosed with Alzheimer's. So for a 23-year-old to understand the gravity of the situation and think that it's a terminal illness, because it is a terminal illness. Like, you might not die from Alzheimer's, but you're going to forget how to hold a spoon. You're going to forget your family members. There is a sense of loss before the death.
It actually is a rising cause of death in Korea when it's getting into the top 10 causes of death.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of people just don't understand. Like, I've talked to friends and other family members who never had to go through it directly, and, like, they don't understand. It's like, oh, they forget stuff or they repeat themselves. Like, you know, just play along with whatever they're saying. It's like, no, you don't understand. No.
So much more devastating. Yes. Than that. It's not just that. And Chaerok, it was obvious, didn't have, like, a ton of family members. Mm-hmm, so did he have personal experience? Did he know someone? Yeah. Again, it's like another thing of this drama not giving us a ton of information, like background information to work with that. But he understood that this was, like, such bad news for Harabuji, and he felt so bad for Haramuni and for Haraboji's granddaughter, who he was kind of friends with. Like, it was just, he realized the gravity. But is that, like, realistic? I don't know.
I agree. That didn't seem realistic to me. I mean, it seemed realistic to me as an audience member, because I'm like, sure. Oh, God, yeah, like, that's, say goodbye, because it's really, it'll take... I don't want to say it's going to take its time, but the progression is difficult to grapple with as a caregiver.
And I think it's so unpredictable. So, like,
exactly.
He seemed very kind of shook about it. Like, oh my gosh, Harabuji has Alzheimer's. And he was, like, struggling. Like, how do I break this news to anyone else in the family? Or should I break this news? Or, like, it's his news to give. Mm-hmm. He was going through the struggle, which I thought was really well portrayed. And Song Kang did a great job acting all that out, that dilemma and his worry and his concern and fear. But you know, for example, you had this personal experience of knowing someone with Alzheimer's, and that you were someone who was very close to you, and you saw firsthand, like, what they go through on a day-to-day basis as they continue to progress. I don't know if Chaerok had that experience or how he exactly knew. I was just wondering, and I was really curious. I was like, how does he know? It was not like, mm-hmm. I was like, oh, he doesn't know. That's ridiculous. But I was just more like, how does he know? Like, mm-hmm, that's really amazing that he knows. And I was curious.
Yeah, he's so attuned to it. It was kind of bizarre.
I almost thought for a second his mom had it or something, because true. I was like, how did his mom die?
Yeah, they never said. They never said how she died either. So that
they didn't say hardly anything about his mom, and I was like going crazy.
He kept visiting her and talking to her while in the columbarium, and I'm like, but how did she die? Like, why did she die so
suddenly? What was the relationship like?
Yeah.
What was her relationship like with his dad, who, you know, obviously went to jail? Was she alive during that? I think she was. But anyway, I was like, I needed so much more about his mom and that, like, his life before his dad went to jail.
Yes. And I wanted so much more from the dad character as well, yeah. who they seemed to want to have a, they did like a half-baked reconciliation with the dad. And I
definitely half-baked.
It's half-baked because there was a couple of conversations, a couple of words had, and then like, what? We just forgive all the years of abuse? Like, where? I'm like, there's something okay, and missing. Yeah,
did the dad abuse Chanuk as well, or did he abuse him only as part of the soccer team? Why was he beating kids in the soccer team? Like, I was so lost.
Yes, it was a bizarre thing. What was happening? Why did he go to prison for beating children that were playing soccer?
I know,
soccer?
It's kind of not uncommon in Korea, I don't think, to beat children. But, you know, from, like, it's teachers or, like, I mean, I think it's less common now. But I know, like, there's other dramas where they show teachers practicing corporal punishment on students. So I was like, is this a crime? Like, genuinely, I was like, is this a crime? Why was it a crime? Why was this incident a crime and not other incidents? Did he, like, he didn't, like, murder anyone, not to sound flippant about it. But then the bully having this, like, whole agenda
vendetta
against that whole family. Yeah, total vendetta against the family. Like, of course that makes sense, because but then it was like, but why? Because he's like, my career's over. And then the grandpa was like, no, it's not over. And I was like, what is going on right now? Like, I don't get what anyone's doing in this drama. Like,
the bully, I couldn't get a read on him for a lot of the times. Right. It was so one note, and you're just like,
but no,
oh,
he was like a good boy when he was like a little soccer player. And then he was like a bully with bleached hair and then like just indiscriminately beating up people, it seemed like. And then I don't know, it was weird.
I didn't like that. No okay.
And
yeah, okay, go ahead. What were you gonna say?
Okay, I was gonna say one more thing about the best friend, Chanuk's best friend, who's the goalkeeper in the soccer team and knew the bully, and but yeah, wasn't really afraid of the bully because he's like, this is not my deal, this is between like Chanuk's dad and the bully. I was like, what are these relationships? Because he seemed close to both of them, sort of, on like, no, you're not friends with the bully, but he seemed like they like had this history, like they were teammates, they knew each other, they were maybe friends. And then when the dad goes to jail, but that surely was not the first time he like whooped all these soccer players. So like, I don't really know.
There's so many questions, unanswered questions are piling up here. Here's a question we can probably answer though. Do you think Song Kang is a good actor?
So at first I was like, this guy is not good. Okay, I've never seen Love Alarm, and I haven't watched Nevertheless, and I haven't watched a lot of them, but I know he's very popular. So I kind of had high expectations in my mind for him. And at first I was like, this is not good acting. But then I realized, actually, it was pretty good acting, because the parts where, so Chanuk, just to like backtrack a little, Chanuk was essentially abandoned in a way. Like, his mother died, so she didn't intentionally abandon him, but she's gone. And then his dad is like in jail, also not intentional, but he's gone. And he's like just so alone. And he's, the struggles where he's like alone in his apartment, and it's just like hitting him in like emotional waves that I'm alone and no one's there for me, and I have to survive somehow. I have to, like, my dad doesn't even care, is how he feels, right? He just like pieces out after his release from prison. And I thought those quiet moments where he's just like going through really deep emotions were so amazing, because he doesn't say anything, right? It's like, not, there's no dialogue,
right?
Really.
Okay,
it's just feeling the feels. So
now here's,
I think he's,
you think he is a good, okay. Here's my take. This is a hot take.
All right.
I don't think Song Kang is a good actor.
Okay. I mean, I didn't either at first, so.
I have watched him in The Lion Who's Lover. I've watched him in season one of Love Alarm. I've watched him in Nevertheless. I don't think he's a good actor. There's something about looking at Song Kang, and there's something about his little beady eyes that I can't get a read on. I feel like there's nothing there, and that scares me. That there, it seems,
think,
so empty.
Yeah.
He seems so empty a lot of the time.
Emotionless.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's what happened with Navi Lera, where I was like, this guy doesn't emote. And then I was like, well, his character is sort of like, you know, a trauma response is to be like in a frozen sort of state, right? If that's what you want to call it. I'm kind of diagnosing him from over here without any credentials. But if he's like, if he's like traumatized, or if he's like going through it essentially, and he just can't, like, he doesn't have time to feel his feelings, it sort of then did make sense that he's so like stony and like emotionless. And but then, like, yeah, I thought he had his moments. I'll say that he had his moments.
I would agree that in this show he probably did the best that I've seen him act, especially like when he was driving a car at one point. He was like freaking out because he can't drive very well. I was like, okay, some emotion he's acting. The goodbye scene.
When he was looking for Haraboji?
Yes. Yeah, that was good too.
At the aquarium or like in general in the bathrooms of the ballet studio.
Right. Yeah, he's panicked and you're like, okay, I feel this. I feel the urgency. I feel the panic. I think when he said goodbye to Haraboji in the airport as well, I was like, oh God, Song Kang, you're bringing it. It was very emotional because he starts crying too and they hug, yeah. Which is very uncommon in K-dramas for two yeah. male figures to hug. And I was like, oh God. Yes. So I would say that he did the best in this one. Still not stellar. Still not a great actor to me. I think he has a long way to go. He's got the model look, but like not the chops, the acting chops yet. Mm-hmm. So that's the end of my hot take.
Okay.
Haraboji's wife, she goes through quite an arc, actually, where she is very close-minded and upset at him learning ballet. And I had very little sympathy for her. I was like, she has no leg to stand on. And I felt so much anger toward her. Towards the first
I did too
half.
Because the reasons she gave were ridiculous. She's like, don't you want to live for your kids? Why are you doing your own thing? And I was like, what? He's retired. Yes. Like, what do you want him to do? His kids are adults. Like, what's he supposed to do exactly? Like, she kept packing food for them and like giving them like, come over and get the soup. Come over and get this, whatever she made. Mm-hmm. And that's nice. But they didn't need that. It wasn't mm-hmm. like these adult children had any kind of need that the Haraboji should have been attending to. And so she was just getting mad at him for like no reason. She's like, this is ridiculous. Every moment you live should be for your kids. It's like, what? This is ridiculous, even for like Asian family.
Yeah, like, she had a skewed version of like what her role is at this point in life, where she was still trying to be the mom. And it's like, no, you're pretty much done. Like, they're already cooked. Like, the youngest, the mangne, is 39 years old. You're done.
Right. He said that so many times. He's like, I'm 39. I'm 39.
Yeah, he said that over and over again. And now I remember it. But when she guilts him into quitting ballet, I was seething.
No, when she cut into his leggings, ooh. I was ready to throw something.
Oh my God, I was so mad. Oh my God.
That was the worst ever moment.
Yeah.
In like that whole drama, I felt like was when she cut up his dance leggings.
Yes, he like, cut up his leotard and then said, age gracefully. Like, that was the thing she kept saying, like, age gracefully, just go hiking with me. Like, why do you need to do
this? She was just like, you're such an embarrassment. And I did feel like her deal was like the status quo that she like worked so hard to achieve and wanted to maintain at all costs for her kids, even like her kids had to live up to it. I feel like in her mind, her husband had to live up to it. She had to live up to it. And I think, and I know they struggled in the early days of their marriage. But then she was so hung up on it still. I was like, this is ridiculous.
Yeah, you don't give her an inch in this show as an audience member. She kept citing her kids. She was like, they were just too poor to send their kids school fees when they were younger. And the kids grew up well, despite all these circumstances. So can't he stop ballet for the kids now when they're so against it? Like, bullshit. We've already established our grown-ass kids. Like, let Haraboji live.
And they've achieved this level of success. Like you said, like, despite their, yes, they had hardships, but now they're all kind of like, maybe not as settled as she would like or as successful as she would like. But they're there. They're at the point she brought them up to be at. So I don't know what more she really wants.
Yeah.
Why she needs to bring Haraboji into this.
She kind of saw ballet as being this frivolous thing when they sacrificed so much to raise their kids. But I'm like, babe, it's been 20 years since you were like raising a child, so
this is the time.
This is the time for him to, he can do ballet. It was very frustrating to watch the family have family meetings over the Haraboji learning ballet. Like, what is that? Why do we need a family meeting about this?
No idea. And ludicrous. It's not like he put on a tutu, walked down the street, and then like went to ballet class. Like, maybe that's an issue in their neighborhood, but that would have been an issue in their neighborhood. But he just was casually going to his studio, doing his thing, and coming home. That's it. Like, it's like going to the gym almost.
Yeah, he's not even hurting anybody. Like,
no.
The asshole son, the oldest son. I call him the asshole son.
He's the one I really was like, why are we? I didn't care about him.
Yeah, because you can't root for him at all. Like, he's terrible. I think at one point, his wife was going back to work, right? After 20 years, like, she's going back to work finally, full time. It's what she's wanted. Like, since the child was born, she's wanted to go back to work full time. And he was offended that she wanted to go back to work, offended that she had an interview for the job. He was like, he was demanding that she still fulfill her responsibilities as a mom and a wife.
So I really did not understand this because I feel like they met as sort of equals or peers or whatever, as colleagues, something. So why are you so weirded out by her desires to like go back to that status? Especially she did fulfill her duties as a mom and
exactly.
wife. Exactly. So you want her to like keep packing bento boxes for you? Like, I don't understand. Like, it was very weird.
It was
very weird.
It was so annoying. And then, of course, his reaction to the dad starting ballet. I mean, he kept saying that, why are you doing this to me? Dad starting ballet was like to spite him as a punishment right. to him. Like, he's the victim.
I think that was very much a reflection of his mom. His mom's attitude was like, you're ruining our whole family by you doing this little thing. And the eldest son kind of mirrored that, like, you're ruining my life. I'm the most prestigious one here, basically, was his attitude the whole time. So he's like, this is going to affect me the most. I have the most to lose. And I guess it was supposed to show like him and his mom being on the same page, whereas everyone else was like, we don't care this much. But
I think the tide finally changes when that son drops in on them and sees the dad in his leotard and blows a gasket. Like, he completely is out of line and disrespectful the way he speaks to his father. And finally, the wife, the Hanmoni, is like, just starts hitting him and starts like, why are you talking that way to your father? He's done so much for this family. You don't understand. Because he was saying stuff that, like, I've never asked you for a favor ever. You know, I've had to make sacrifices growing up while you got to live comfortably. And like, no.
Whoa,
it's the other way around.
Out of pocket.
It's so disrespectful. So the mom finally, she sticks up for Haruoji. And she says, why does our son's success have to make us feel so small? Why does your father have to feel sorry when you've grown up so well?
That's so profound.
Yeah. So I love that line. And I love that she finally is like, do ballet. Like, it's fine.
Actually, for me, that was a moment too where she was like, because prior to that, she kept being like, I do everything for my kids. I sacrifice my whole life for my kids. And then she finally was like, actually, this should be more reciprocal than it maybe is. Like, they were kind of up until that point ignoring them a little bit. Like, they were always bugged by her. And they're like, oh, mom's texting again. Oh, I think she wants to pick up soup again or whatever. And they were like very bothered. And then she finally was like, actually, you guys need to respect us and appreciate us. And that was kind of good. Yeah, I liked that part.
Yeah, I have so many lines here. I cannot go through each one, but like, I faced my problem head on because I wanted to be happy. What makes you happiest? Someone asked me that question today, but I couldn't answer it. I'm going to find out. And that's something that Song Kang asks the granddaughter because they're like semi-friends.
Yeah, that was an interesting relationship.
And I don't think they really gave her arc a lot of play as much as they did in like the middle episodes where she's shown at work with Song Kang and she's getting treated badly. She's doing badly on the job. She gets played by her evaluator who wanted her to like translate her thesis paper into English and then gave her a C on the evaluation and like shot down her chances at landing a permanent position at the company. It was like all this drama. And then like, we don't get as much drama the rest of the show for her. She had like this really juicy moment and then like, it's done.
Yeah. And then she's like, I love working at the radio. I was like, whoa, like that happened way too quickly. Like, go from like, she had this other idea of her life. And then she's like, I don't want this radio internship. And then she gets it. Then she's like, just kidding. I love it. And I was like, what? That happened so fast.
That
like,
was weird too. Yeah. Because at the end, she sits down with Song Kang and she's like, oh yeah, I found it. I found what makes me happy. And he's like, what is that? She's like, working at the radio station makes me. I was like, but hold on. How do we get there? You were being awkward.
Especially because she was just like a coffee bringer, like copies maker. She wasn't like a anything important. Not to be mean. That is important. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but she wasn't doing meaningful work, right?
Right. Fulfilling work or something like that.
She was just showing up.
I do like that they didn't have any, like, it seemed like they were going to get, like, kind of romantical or feelings.
Let's talk about this because I thought this too. I was like, oh, they're going to get, Song Kang and the granddaughter are going to make it as a couple by the end of the show or something to that effect.
Yeah.
Never happened. What the hell?
It was both frustrating, but I was kind of like, actually, this is good because for one thing, I think towards the end, maybe this, again, just me, but they almost had a sibling dynamic. They're like, we share a grandpa. So now it's like, okay, we don't want them to get together. Also, to fulfill his dreams, there's no way he could really be with her because she's like working at a local radio station. He's like, I gotta go be a ballerino in Italy or whatever he was doing. So it was kind of impractical. And yeah, he just was so adopted by the Haramoni that it seemed almost incestuous. It would have been almost incestuous. You know, that was my take on it.
Right.
Again, I could be reading this in a really weird way. But they did have this really nice camaraderie and understanding. And she's like, you look after my grandpa. And I think she had this such appreciation for how he did look after her grandpa. Mm-hmm. And she recognized that, acknowledged that. And she was just like, I'm here for you, bro. Like, I liked that dynamic as a change. But yes, at some points I was like, are they going to kiss? Are they going to get together? But yeah. Prior to all that, yeah, I was kind of hoping.
Is Song Kang going to blankly look out a window and like they cut to the granddaughter and so he's obviously thinking of her? Like, no, it never happens. No,
never happens. It's kind of refreshing but kind of a letdown if you're into gay drama.
I agree completely. It is like, okay, I was expecting it. I would have been okay with it, but then they didn't do it. And I'm like, okay, yeah, platonic friendship is okay too. Like, it's fine.
Yeah.
Either way, but it was a bit of a fake out.
Yes. They're compatible.
Yeah. I was very emotional during the ballet scene in the snow. And there were three ballet scenes in the snow.
Right, right.
Where, and this one was in episode 8, where Haraboji loses his memory and he's like been standing in the street frozen for like over 30 minutes. And he couldn't remember Chaedok. So Chaedok starts dancing in the walkway park. There. Oh yeah. My God.
That was great.
Beautiful.
Beautiful. Stunning. And you got Park In-won, like his portrayal of someone so freaked out, doesn't know where he is, doesn't know who he's talking to, doesn't know what's happening, is just having this like moment where his Alzheimer's symptoms are flaring, if that's the way I could describe it. I thought that was such a good portrayal because he looks so freaked out. And then putting that scene in, the writers putting that scene in with Song Kang, like dancing to jog his memory was so genius, I thought. Like,
yeah.
You know, he could have just been like, remember, we take ballet together and I'm your teacher. He did do a little bit of that. But then he's like, okay, I'm just going to start dancing. Because it shows how this art is so moving, especially for Haraboji in particular. It's more than words. It's more than anything else.
Oh my God. Yes. It's transcending. You know?
Yes, totally.
Oh, God.
Great word.
It was beautiful. And I didn't care that wasn't Song Kang dancing the silhouette or whatever. Right. I was just moved. I was moved when that scene came up. And, of course, Haraboji does remember him. He, like, it does jog his memory. So I think of it as, like, movie magic because in real life, I do not think that a little dancing boy will jog an Alzheimer's patient's memory.
You never know.
It's a very unpredictable disease. And a funny story, my grandmother, she just recently passed away like a couple of months ago, but she...
Sorry to hear that.
Thank you. She also got dementia in her way later than my grandfather did. She was in her late 80s, but she got dementia and it was a very rapid decline for her. But she never forgot that my friend met her husband on a cruise. Like, they would come and visit, she wouldn't remember who they were, and then they'd start talking to me like, oh yeah, you guys met on the cruise, right? So like, so random funny. Yeah, the most random thing that she remembered. But the dancing in the snow sequence in episode 10 also shook me up. That was when Haraboji starts dancing in the like lights from the car and it's snowing again. Oh my gosh,
I thought it was interesting because the traditional K-drama trope is snow means romance, right? First snow, first time you like get together or whatever it is. Like, there's always all these things about snow. Not that this was first snow necessarily, but in this drama, they use snow for these pivotal moments that are related to ballet, which was like, in a way, his first love, if you think about it.
Keep going.
But yeah, like, it's something that's so meaningful and his passion, and he like kind of tamped it down for so long. And then every time it snows, there's like this important dance scene. I thought that was a nice, again, I kind of appreciate some of the variations away from the regular drama tropes and regular expectations of what the drama will be, because it's so much more creative and kind of more meaningful, I thought, anyway.
Yes. Beautiful interpretation of that, because, yes, snow is usually a romance thing, but this is a romance with an art form.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, know? Yeah, that's a really good way to put it, yeah.
Beautiful. I think that I kind of lost it and started crying during the family meeting where they're talking about the nursing home situation.
Yeah.
And that discussion that all the kids have with each other.
That's when the granddaughter was my hero.
So they're talking about what they're going to do, right? Mm-hmm. The oldest son says, oh, we're going to take him. We're going to take him in. We're going to take care of him. And that's when the sister says, no, you know, we're going to take him in. And her politician husband steps up and says it before she can get the words out and says, no, we'll take him. I've been in these conversations. You know, I've been in these family meetings. What are we going to do? Because it's getting worse. And you guys can't take care of, so-and-so. So it almost felt like I've been in that room, and the tension, the emotions, and the fact that you have to kind of have to put on a different hat because you have to think logically. Mm-hmm. You cannot think emotionally. Like, what are you? He cannot take care of himself. He can't stay by himself, but I work full time.
Right.
I cannot be with him 24 hours a day, and he needs 24/7 supervision. So something's got to give.
Yeah, my family's from Bangladesh, and there's like a big stigma about like nursing homes or that's like abandoning your family.
Yes.
And you have the one to take care of your family. So the elder son was like, no, we're the family. And the sister was like, but realistically, we need help. We need professional nurses or whoever to come, either in the home or we have to send, like, you know, it was like a huge emotional battle. But that struggle between logic and emotions, I thought, was really well portrayed.
Really well portrayed. It was a very well written. And like you said, I come from a Hispanic culture. It's the same exact thing in our culture where the older you get, the older generation expects that their children will take care of them in their old age, no matter what. Going into a nursing home is like not an option. It's taboo. Like, you don't do that. It seems like you're abandoning your family member.
Throwing them away or something.
Yes. Yeah. Like, just like strangers. Putting them away in a nursing home. Mm-hmm. And that's not the case at all. I've had to unlearn this, actually, like as a Hispanic coming from this culture and dealing with it firsthand three different times, actually. I feel completely that it's not the case. You're not abandoning your family member. You need help. They need help. They need specialized help.
Right. That is a taking care of them.
Yes.
To give them the best care. Unless you're a trained geriatric nurse, you're not going to be able to provide that care, or geriatric doctor. You need to leave something, a diagnosis like this. This is not just regular aging or whatever you call it.
This
is like a different thing entirely. And they're not capable and they're not equipped, especially if you have a full-time job, especially if you don't know what you're doing in this scenario. And you do need to consider something like a home or a special facility, or at least in-home care, something.
Yeah, something. I mean, in my case, it went three different ways. So my grandmother swore that she would take care of her husband. She's going to do it no matter what. And she took care of him for 7 years. He was bedridden, and she took care of him on her own. Would not recommend. 0 out of 10 would recommend, because it really chipped away at her spirit, chipped away at her energy, and it felt like it aged her a lot more, and she needed help all the time. So we were going over there all the time. We were moving him. You had to move them so he wouldn't get bed sores, and then he got a bed sore, and it was devastating, and it was all these things. 0 out of 10 would recommend that. My aunt got what's it called, frontotemporal dementia, which is an early onset dementia. She was in her 50s and she basically got dementia, and the same thing, she became bedridden, she couldn't function. And my grandmother was like, I'm going to do it all over again. I'm going to take care of him. We were like, no, we're not going to do that again. It went horribly. You need help. Right. You can't deal with her on your own. So we hired We hired a nurse who would come and like take care of her during the day and help out and stuff. Which, again, I don't think that was enough at all, because they didn't want the nurse to, or have another nurse to spend the night and have an overnight nurse. Mm-hmm. So it was like wild at night, because sundowning is a real thing. And then my grandmother, which was most recent, I'm older now. So I had more of a say in like what the care was going to look like. And I was like, you guys can't do this. I was talking to my dad, right? He's the only son left. And they were doing their best. My mom was basically the politician in this story, where she married into the family, and she was like, we're going to do it. We're going to take care of her. And
is a sweet sentiment.
Yes.
Such a sweet and
they,
loyal sentiment.
You know, it's hard, because in my family, my mother's parents died young. And so my father's parents my grandmother, they were like a second parents to her. And they've known each other for like over 40 years. So it was very much an emotional decision to make logically to now is that we can't do this anymore. We have to put her in a home with memory care, which was a whole nother thing, right? Because there's nursing homes for people that don't have dementia. And then there's memory care, which is like a whole nother thing. But I mean, in this case, seeing this conversation in Navillera and seeing how they kind of like were like, oh, he's doing okay right now. Like, we can take care of him. Like, again, this is when I was like, you don't understand. It's like progressive. Yeah. Like, they will not be able to maintain this. Like, he will not remember. The moment where he forgets them in the final episode. And it's the day, D-Day, the day of the performance. And he forgets everybody, forgets like who he is, forgets how to dance. I was like, oh no. And then I have a little bit of pessimism, like in my view, because I'm like, well, who knows when he'll reset and like be able to remember everything. And the family's face when the relief and joy when he recognizes them finally. I found that heartbreaking. Most people would be like, oh yes, he can do it. He can dance in the showcase. And I'm like, oh no, girl, like
because you
this is heartbreaking relapse because again. There is no doubt in my mind that this is going to happen more frequently, and the times when he remembers them is going to be less and less.
It was so sad.
So to me, it was sad. It was heartbreaking.
It was like, it's weird as a viewer and you're just thinking of these characters and you're like, I want to see the dance. Like, I'm looking right for the dance. We built up to this. And then it was so heartbreaking when he couldn't recognize his wife. He couldn't recognize Chedok. He didn't remember ballet. And then he was sort of getting it again. And they're like, all right, you got to like remember. And he's like, it's so much pressure. I feel like that level of stress on someone who's going through a diagnosis like this would kind of exacerbate their symptoms almost more. So it was like, and it was a moment for me where like, is this realistic? I don't know, but we're in drama land. So I'll just like go with it.
Right.
But yeah.
Speaking of things that are in drama land, I noticed that Song Kang was using chopsticks with his left hand. Mm. And then when he wrote the like spell, quote unquote, in the ballet shoe for Haraboji, he was using his right hand to write. And I was like, wait, is Song Kang ambidextrous?
He could just, I know some people are left-handed, do some random things with their right hand, so maybe that's all it was. Or, like, at school, maybe he was, because I was actually born left-handed, and my parents read us something in the news about, like, studies show left-handed children, blah, blah, whatever, or adults grow up to something. So they were like, oh, you're switching to your right hand, and they had to, like, train me. So he may not be necessarily ambidextrous, but maybe he like was told at school you gotta write with your right hand.
Oh, and so, I don't know. Yeah, I've heard of that happening. I actually, the only thing that I do lefty is play pool.
Oh, okay.
I don't know why. And I didn't learn, like, I wasn't like, someone's gonna teach me how to play pool. It's like a natural, like, this feels comfortable, I can control it, like, this is just, and I don't know why. If anyone is listening out there and is like, I can do things with my right hand that I can't do with my left hand, vice versa, let us know, like, how are you oddly ambidextrous? Yeah. Is there anything else that you would like to say about Navillera? Because we're coming up on like the end of the show.
Well, I just wanted to touch on Chedok's coach, the former famous ballerino himself who had a back injury.
Yes.
Whole deal with his ex-wife / new wife. And that was a very strange part, like a person to me. I didn't know how to feel about him. It seemed like Chedok was hiding his struggles with, like, you know, I'm alone, I'm trying to like live on my own, I have multiple jobs. He wasn't telling him. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what about Chedok did this ballerino guy find so, like, he said it, but we didn't like see it, or if we did, we didn't like come through to me that this was like amazing dance work for like a almost untrained child. But he like took him under his wing and he's like, this is my protege. And I was like, but why? And then he like had this whole deal with his ex-wife and I was like, but why? And then you know, he was famous and then his like career went to end. They didn't show like any, almost any of his like struggles with that depression or whatever feelings he might have had after that. He just was like, anyway, now I have this ballet company. And I was just like, what are we doing with this guy? He seemed fine, but yeah,
I agree. I thought that they, again, a half-baked subplot with this guy and his background, where I didn't quite understand like what was happening until like the later episodes, where he was like, I was in a rut, I got this injury, I tried to danced through it, and it ended up ending my career. And so he had like an identity crisis, an existential crisis. And then Song Kang came into the picture. So I was like, oh, he was dancing until like recently then.
Yeah. And it all happened so fast. Mm-hmm. This like revelation about exactly how this all went down was very, very fast in one episode. And I was like, oh, there's like no like build up or like, and it's not about him. I get that. The show's not about him, but it was weird. I did appreciate though for Nabilera how there was like this sort of, it was kind of diverse. There's like an elder person trying to do ballet. There was that ballet company that had like the wheelchair user dancer.
Yeah.
That was really cool. But I thought it was weird and kind of unlikely that really very little was about men in ballet. There was no like the bully wasn't bullying him about that.
Which true. Is
like, that's like bully him about that maybe. Like I don't know why you're here. They didn't really make the girl was not weird. No one was weird out. And I feel like in Korea maybe people would be more like I don't know, honestly.
They didn't talk about like the gender politics of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where
they did talk a little about the elderly, like he's too old to do ballet. Okay, fine. But they glossed over gendered stuff.
You are completely right, because I think that's more realistic than probably a lot of the other subplots that they had going on. And totally. What they were bullying, like the bully was like bullying in a very complex way, like a complex reason for the bullying. And I was like, no, man, simplify.
Yeah. I wonder if the webtoon kind of delves into this more. I didn't read it.
Right. Yeah, no, I didn't either. I forgot to mention that in the first half, but I agree. The bullying could have been a little more traditional.
So that's why I found it all very distracting. And the fact that they kind of divulge the reasons for some of these things very late in the game, I was like, well, now I don't even care. I've like accepted that this bully is weird. I've accepted that this coach guy like kind of cares about Chirok, but kind of doesn't care about Chirok. Mm-hmm. And I kind of was just like at peace with these things. And they're like, oh, this is why. Or like, this is what happened. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I forgot I cared about that 4 episodes ago.
I agree. And I think we've been bashing this show a lot more than I like intended to bash it. But this show, it's worth watching. I would recommend it to people. It has a lot of this. I think we mentioned this in the My Mister episode, but like this Korean concept of Jong, which is like a kindred spirit, someone you're not related to by blood, who seems to have this strange connection with you. And that is the relationship between Song Kang's Chaeruk and the Haraboji. Like they have this like weird sort of connection where they understand each other and they're almost like two sides of the same coin.
They're like soulmates.
Really. They're soulmates, essentially. Like that's the only equivalent of this relationship, is just saying that they're soulmates. And that's why I like this show.
That's why I liked My Ajushi too. It's the same thing, right? Mm-hmm. Like you just said, it's like sometimes in dramas, I love romance dramas, don't get me wrong, but it's kind of nice to see like there's nothing romantic going on, but it's very deep and intimate anyways. Mm. Or I guess in My Ajushi, there's like sort of like mini. but it's more like this intimacy that is very much unspoken. It's not like super outward, and they both are feeling at the same time. And I think about that in real life, like the energy vibrations, like between them must have been like really so intense, and the chemistry between the actors is so good. Like I was totally buying that Chaeruk was friends with like a 70-year-old man. He's like 23. But he's buddies, his best friend's like the 73-year-old. And and even when Haraboni like adopts Chaeruk immediately, she's like, okay, you're my grandson now. And I was like, this is so heartwarming.
It's precious. It's precious. This show goes out to all the dreamers out there who want to pursue something that seems like a pipe dream, that seems unlikely, that seems like you have no talent, you shouldn't be wasting your time. This one goes out for all of you, all of us. Like, there's so many quotes in here, like, just trust yourself and keep going. Happiness could be felt in the little details. You don't always have to achieve something grand. Even if you make a mistake, don't stop. Just keep going. It's like almost like a love letter to the struggle, to the grind, to trying something new. And it's beautiful. It's very encouraging. And I like that about the show. Just like the grander themes of it, where you don't have to be a young spring chicken to learn ballet, which is a highly technical, athletic performance art.
And your goal doesn't have to be like prima ballerino of blah, blah, blah. Like, yeah, that is a good goal, but not everyone's going to make that, you know, get there. And so just pursuing something for the sake of pursuing it is also valuable.
Yeah. I loved that part of the show. I loved that, you know, don't give up. All of these like almost mantras that the show explores and talks directly to the audience at times, it feels like, and some of the dialogue right. feels like it's like fourth wall breaking because they're it's like so uplifting.
And they're speaking directly to you, the audience.
It seems like that. And then, of course, they put on all these extra clothes with all of the other subplots. And
it was too much, man. Yeah. And I just still don't get why his best friend, like, it was like the worst best friend ever, or like he was the worst best friend to him. I was like, what is this relationship? But yeah, he had a lot more love than he felt like he had. And I thought that was interesting to show because he was so alone, but he wasn't. And then the new friends, the found family aspect of it with, mm-hmm. of course, Haraboji, but then Haramoni took him in immediately. His play cousin, his Haraboji's granddaughter. That also was really touching, I thought.
Yeah. I thought Navilera means something in Spanish because to me when I read it, I was like, oh, it's a Spanish word or something. No, it's not. It's a Korean word that combines the word for butterfly with an old literary suffix, and it roughly translates to like a butterfly.
Yes. Butterfly-esque. God. Sorry, damn. Not this time. The Spanish-Korean drama crossover. It'll happen one day, but not yet.
This was not it. But I love that the word has something to do with a butterfly. And then there was a lot of aspects of the show where they said, a lot of dialogue where they said, did you soar? He's going to soar like an eagle. Mm-hmm. And just representing that sort of potential that is within both of them, both Song Kang's character and the Haraboji.
I also like that they talked a lot about like how important it is to practice basic steps, even if you're a pro, even if you're like the best ballerino in Korea, like you still have to practice the basics. You have to go back to basics and not neglect how important that is, or not neglect your body. Like when the ballerina coach guy was injured, but he like danced through it. Like those are all lessons. So many lessons in this show.
Yes. Really. It's lesson heavy, but I like it. That's
what
I like.
In a preachy way.
No, it's not preachy. No.
It's just encouraging.
It's touching. It's touching. Yeah. And also, Butterfly, I know you haven't watched Nevertheless, but Butterfly and Nevertheless are directly related. And there's something about a tattoo in there. So, like, I don't want to say nothing much, but I don't want to spoil Nevertheless, but it's very fitting that this Navilera also means like a butterfly. For Song Kang.
Son of Netflix, Song Kang.
Son of Netflix. Okay, I think I've reached the end of my notes. Did you have anything else? Oh my God. The So-in-guk cameo in episode 9.
Oh, I know. I was like, is that So-in-guk? Is that him? Like, I was having a moment. I was like, am I hallucinating this? That was great.
I freaked out. And I'll tell you something. I didn't think that I was such a So-in-guk fan. But every time, like, he walked into the room. And you don't even see his face. I just saw like silhouette, like his body. And I was like, is that So-in-guk? Apparently I know him by like the shape of his general body. So I was like, I was like impressed with myself that I was like, oh God, it's So-in-guk. And they hadn't even done any close-ups on him yet. So kudos to me for being a closeted So-in-guk super fan, apparently.
Yeah, that was I was going to also mention the Taemin OST because I love him. It was like such a easy breezy little song. It wasn't like Taemin doing all his like Taemin-y like stuff, but it was like it was like a sweet song, and his voice was really soothing in that song. So to me, that was like its own cameo, right? Taemin, So-in-guk, just like stealing the scenes.
Oh God. Yes. Thank you for that. The Taemin and the So-in-guk on the OST. Yes, beautiful all around. Is there anything else that you would like to add about Navilera?
I wanted to add a little bit about the webtoon writers, what they said, and something about doing ballet. So the webtoon writers, who also were part of the drama creation or production or something, they mentioned, so this is from an article, I'm just going to quote it. It says, Park, which is Park In-won, the person who played Haraboji, is 76 years old. Okay, so side note, he's playing a 70-year-old, but he was 76, and he does not look 76, whatever that I thought looked like. It was not that. But anyway, it says, Park is 76 years old, and while he may have found the ballet scenes difficult, Han said that he didn't want to cast a younger actor and use special makeup because he thought it was important to get across the lifetime's worth of wisdom through each word and wrinkle of the actor. He added that he had no doubt that Park could pull it off. And then for his part, yeah, so cute. And I also appreciate it. Like, again, bringing more diversity and everything into K-dramas is always important. So I think considering like an elder actor as opposed to like aging young actor, I thought was important. And so Park In-won himself said in another interview, I thought this was funny. He said, it was challenging enough that I had to wear ballet outfits that stuck to my body, said Park. When you become my age, it's hard to exercise because your body gets stiffer. I took on the challenge as if I was Duk Chul and trying something new. Aww. So I thought that was really cool. Yeah, and he also talked about how his granddaughters like laughed at him at the thought of him like doing ballet, but that now they just keep playing all his ballet scenes from the show.
That's adorable. That's just cute. That's adorable. Yeah, thanks for sharing that. That's beautiful. And you know what? I was kind of right though, because it sounds like he was a little bit self-conscious about the tight clothing that he wore.
Yeah. I mean, I know a lot of times in Korea, a lot of men in leotards or tights will put on like shorts over it anyways. Oh, so yeah. I think like culturally, yeah, that might have been a consideration. But I did think too, maybe they were, because they could have just done like a lot of feet close-ups, but they didn't really do that as much either as I thought they might. So maybe it was like a combination of like modesty and we're not professionals out here.
Yeah. Well, if that's all you have for Navilera, I definitely want to thank you so much for coming on and providing so much insight. You did research for this, which is amazing. Not only like watching all these hours of television, but coming on and being so prepared. I want to thank you so much. I hope you had a great time.
I did.
Yeah. I love your podcast. So, you know, where can we find you online for those who don't know?
I'm on Twitter at K-pop Bookshelf, and I'm on Instagram. I think it's K-pop Bookshelf Pod. I don't know. I forgot already like what my handles were. They're a little bit different on each, but I'm on Instagram more than Twitter. I can tell you that. So yeah.
Yes. And you have wonderful book recommendations, obviously, because your podcast is about reading the book and then discussing the book. And I actually bought one of the books that you recommended. It the Korea, a History book. Had a beautiful cover on it. I think you got the hardback and I got the paperback because that was like the only thing.
It was expensive,
but like I was like so in love with the cover and I was like, oh yeah, I want to read about Korean history from like an actual expert.
And I think a lot of K-pop fans, K-drama fans, and not to say this is good or bad, but sometimes we are a little bit superficial about our knowledge of Korea and we're just like, yeah, ramen and chill, or like we take like weird little like pop culture-y things and run with it. And I am someone who is like, wait, what are they eating? What are they doing? What's a sonbae? Like I have like 1,000 questions. So I was like, I wanted to start the podcast as a way for me to learn about Korean culture in a more in-depth way. So that gives better context to what I'm consuming from a media standpoint. So
beautiful. Love to hear it.
That's where that comes from.
I love it. Thank you so much for coming on the show again. Well, that's been our show. I'm Jessica, and this has been the ATC Presents Daebak K-Rambles podcast. 마치 꿈처럼 아득해 쓸쓸한 그림자 헬향하던 걸음 걸음 괴지쳤어 언제부터일까 간절한 맘 알아보고 싶어 잠든 눈물이 와 하늘에 별이 반짝이